Geekbill Radio.
I have been every voice you have ever heard inside your head.
Hello, once again, ladies and gentlemen, geeks and geekettes. This is Seth, a.k.a. Xandrax, the mayor of Geekville and the host of Geekville Radio. And this has been a show we've been looking forward to doing for a long time, because unless you've been frozen in carbonite for the last couple of years, there was a Star Wars movie that opened up this past weekend. The final installment in what Disney has now decided to call the Skywalker Saga, or what we grew up calling it, Star Wars. And I think what can be said, because I had my own solo review a few days earlier, I'd said that I think this did kind of tread a line between Last Jedi and Force Awakens as far as trying to appease both. So we'll talk about that, because joining me for this review in the nice soft padded cell in South Kakalaki, Crazy Train, Jonathan Bullock.
All aboard, ladies and gentlemen. This is kind of going to be interesting next year, because we have gotten a Star Wars movie every Christmas season for how many years now since Disney took it over, and we won't. This next year will be the first time in a while.
Right.
But as longtime Star Wars fans, we're used to having long lapses where you don't necessarily get a Star Wars movie.
Right.
So
right.
We're used to that. Some of these newer fans are like, they want their fix and they can't get it.
Yeah. Well, I will give my spoiler-free summary here, which is that this was what I was expecting from a sequel trilogy film, or at least it was the closest to what I was expecting. And I've said both on mic and off mic that if you are ending the story, you kind of have to bring things full circle. And I'll probably bring that up a couple times during the rest of the review here. But it sounds like I might have liked it a little bit more than you did, but you said you still liked it though, right?
Yeah, I liked it. And I will say, as a lifelong Star Wars fan, since I was seven at least, which, you know, most of my life, as a lifelong Star Wars fan, I get to, and I think you had said this to me yourself, Seth, this particular chapter felt the most like one that George would have been directly involved in of the current three.
Right, right.
As opposed to, you know, the original and the prequels, because obviously George was directly involved in all those. So
right, right. It had the elements of the prequels, and it had the elements of the sequels that I like, because obviously there's things in the prequels that I like. I defend them where I think they need defending, but they're not perfect. This movie was not perfect. Even our favorite movies in the Star Wars saga, you can find something that could have been done better.
Yes, I know. Clutch the pearls, ladies and gentlemen. There are a few issues with Empire Strikes Back. Not many, but there's some.
All right, with that out of the way, we will wave the spoiler tag.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler hole has been breached. Spoiler hole has been breached.
Now, one thing that I think is worth mentioning as far as the sneak peeks and the trailers that we saw, a lot of the stuff we would see in those sneak peek clips and a lot of the stuff we were seeing in the trailers, that was at the beginning of the movie, pretty much. I mean, they kind of hit the ground running with the Palpatine reveal. And, you know, so I thought it was kind of cool that they did that. They were able to set that up pretty quickly. And of course, Kylo Ren, since he's the supreme leader, you know, he doesn't want anybody treading on his turf, so to speak. So, you know, it was a good setup for having the two heels meet, because, you know, one wants to kill the other and the other one wants to use him. So, you know, heel 101, you might say.
Right.
Now, how do you think of how Palpatine was depicted? Because it seemed to me that there were just some inspiration from the Dark Empire comics. And I was saying this back with The Last Jedi, because that big dreadnought that they had, that was right out of Dark Empire, as well as that whole, you know, making your own force apparition and stuff. And
right.
I think this one with the cloning chambers, at least what looked like cloning, because, you know, it almost looked like there was like pieces of Snoke in various different,
almost back to tanks. Didn't it look like
right, right, yeah. But in the Dark Empire comic series, the way the Emperor came back, and of course this was written long before the prequels came along, but the short explanation was he was able to survive without a body. It was like an essence type thing. And he even uses the term essence in this movie. The Empire had a planet full of clones, and so Palpatine could just possess anyone. So it's not that they were cloning Palpatine per se, or cloning a Jedi or a Sith. They were making a body that would then be inhabited by Palpatine's mind. That seems to be probably something similar to what happened. Although, really, for the first two-thirds of the movie, Palpatine clearly isn't even walking. I mean, he's got the mangled fingers and stuff, but he's like zipping around on like some space age intergalactic meat hook or something like that, you know?
Right. Well, as a horror guy, I was sitting there thinking this had, you know, shades of H.P. Lovecraft's Reanimator.
Yes.
Which, of course, was directly inspired by Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. So I'm sure you can see where I make the parallels.
Right.
And that's just, those are just horror tropes. The idea of the reanimated corpse, or, you know, like you said, the idea of an essence versus, you know, for, you know, more spiritually inclined, they would say a spirit or a soul, you know. That was a vibe I got, and that was kind of cool for me as a horror guy, because though they have touched on darker elements in the entire franchise, this was the most they've ever embraced full-on horror tropes, in my opinion. What say ye?
Yeah, I think to call it that, full-on tropes is valid. I mean, other than that, I think the closest you get, the first scene with Vader where he's in the armor and the way he,
right,
you know, busts himself out, that's right out of Frankenstein, you know?
Right.
So
I think you're right. You mean the infamous no from
right.
the end of yeah. Well, before that, to me, like the closest they went into a dark area like that and skirted horror tropes would probably be the cave scene in Empire when Luke goes down mm-hmm. and, you know, fights, you know, essentially what we know now is like a hallucination. So, which hallucination makes me transition to something you and me have not talked about off mic. What were your thoughts on the revelation of this new force power they showed with Kylo and Rey being able to, like, I don't know, long distance Skype, but they were able, it was able to affect where they were, like, you know, how he gives her the lightsaber from a distance and then it's really in her hand and things like that. We've never seen that kind of force power before. What were your thoughts on them both being able to use it and being used that way?
I think the nickname that was given for it from fans was Force Time, like FaceTime.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they did it in Last Jedi, and we'll probably jump to Last Jedi next, it was feasible the way they were doing it because they were just kind of seeing each other. This one, they were actually interacting more.
Right, and, right.
You know, like I think Kylo even like took a necklace or a bracelet or something like that, and that's
yeah,
how he was able to
on,
tell.
That, yeah, when they were on that planet where they first see Lando, where they're having that celebration or whatever. Yeah, she had gotten the necklace as a gift from one of the natives there, and then he snagged it, and that's when he figured out where she was. Like I said, later on, there's the scene where did she give him a lightsaber, he gives her a lightsaber, and then all of a sudden they've got one where they are, and you're like, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I know this is almost blasphemous to compare the two, but it's almost like they beamed it down from Star Trek. Though I don't know. Can you beam up inorganic material on Star Trek? I don't know. I'm not that big of a Trekkie. So,
inorganic meal. Yeah, you should be able to.
Okay, but you know, remember, I'm not a huge Trekkie like you are. In my opinion, Galaxy Quest is still like the third best Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
But I think Trekkies would agree with me on that one. But I digress.
You know, it all comes down to moving matter. So if anything, it would be safer to beam right. Inanimate objects. But I guess we have to address the Bantha in the room, as I like to call it. Much like The Last Jedi, I mean, Rise of Skywalker is definitely getting better crowd reviews. It's not getting the best critic reviews. And of course, that's one of the big flips that you see is Last Jedi had these wonderful glowing reviews from the critics, but it seems it was only about half the population of Star Wars fans actually liked it. This one is kind of the other way around. It's mixed reviews from critics, and the fan base, though, seems to really like it. So once again, there's a division, but what I said in my solo review a couple days ago, that I think they did a pretty good job of trying to make a happy medium between the two, because yes, they did retcon some of the stuff that was done in Last Jedi. And I think they were also trying to make sure those courses were covered. That might not be the best way of putting it, but you know, it's not like they said outright, oh, this didn't actually happen. You know, they basically put a next step to what was hinted with in Last Jedi. So, I mean, do you get what I mean? Like, as far as it's sure. fixing some of the ruffled feathers.
Sure. I mean, that was one of my first thoughts. I mean, as I'm watching it, I'm thinking to myself, in key areas where JJ is accepting the fact that the movie before this, which wasn't his, was polarizing. Mm-hmm. And that there were elements of it that he had decided were the polarizing things, and he was going to address them head on, and he did. And some of it was things I think were him addressing, not so much gaps or whatever you want to call them from Last Jedi. Some of them were ones that were long term gaps. I mean, the most glaring to me was Chewbacca getting a medal. I mean, that goes all the way back to the end of New Hope, and hardcore fans going, "What, Chewie don't get a medal? Come on."
Well, there is a real-life explanation for that, and that's just because Peter Mayhew's 7'3", and Carrie Fisher was, what, 5'2"?
Yeah, but they were on steps. She could have stood on the top step. She could have stood on the bottom. There's always a way, right? You could have bit down. But I think you're right. I think he was trying to find a balance, but I think it was very, very obvious that JJ was very cognizant of the fact that there were parts of this that were extremely polarizing, and really upset, quite frankly, people of his generation, the lifelongers like us that grew up on this. And he was going to do what he could to appease them without rocking the boat too, you know. And the one thing it made me wonder, and I think we discussed this off mic as well, it really made me wonder as I watched it, what would we have gotten if JJ had been allowed to just do the second one, to do Last Jedi, you know? Did make me wonder that a lot. What say ye?
I can't help but wonder, yeah, because that's one of the things that can be said about all the movies up to the sequel films is obviously George was either directing or having a direct hand in it. So in the end, it was still George's vision. And I think that's one of the problems that they kind of might have learned the hard way here is they had different writers and directors for proper episodes, and then if they're not coordinating, then it's almost like the like that old joke about creative writing where the guy and the girl are trying to finish up each other's stories and the gal's writing all this romance novel stuff and the guy's writing sci-fi
Rambo.
Action. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I think the issue is since there wasn't one person essentially being the guiding light, and obviously not Lou Albano in this case, but Kevin Feige. I think that's something that Marvel really has that is an advantage to them. It is somebody like Kevin Feige paying close attention to make sure everything works together. And
right.
One other thing that I will defend Rian Johnson on, because I've said in writing, looking from an objective point of view, you know, like taking my personal tastes and personal bias out of it, I think Last Jedi was a well-made film. It just didn't go in the direction that I wanted. And like I said, for this one, this went much more in the direction I was expecting.
Right. So it almost breaks down to a matter of personal taste is what you're saying.
Right. And I think it can also be said in Rian Johnson's defense, I don't think the decision was made to make Episode 9 the final Skywalker movie until after Last Jedi was finished. It probably wasn't until Solo did what it did. So I think it's fair to bring up that Rian Johnson likely made The Last Jedi under the impression that there were going to be many more movies after his. So that's why he set these kind of long-term things in place and kind of shifted the direction to, well, anybody can use the Force. And that's even something I can agree with. I know we're talking about Last Jedi, we should get back to Rise of Skywalker, but I liked how Luke was able to say, you know, saying only certain people have this power is vanity. And, you know, but Rey going through the old texts and stuff. I think that's really what her training was. So,
right.
You know, as far as the mending the fence from Last Jedi, it again, it goes back to this was going to be the final one. So they really had to cut short some of the stuff that Rian Johnson did because they have to end, they have to come across on a actual finale to the story being told, you know?
Well, and I think we both have said multiple times that I think even the analogy you use is if you think George has milked this, you know, till Disney. And I do think that, and there's a lot of reasons why. I'm trying to figure out how I want to word this. there are a lot of reasons why, but this has not turned into the cash cow. Granted, it's making a boatload of money, right? But it hasn't turned into the cash cow that I think Disney originally thought it was going to be, you know? It's like I said, it's still making a ton of money. Make no mistake about it, right? It's just, I think on a broader scale, everything has its time and its place, and sometimes it's just a matter of finding that magical time. And Star Wars, yes, it will always be popular. It would always be a part of our pop culture now. But the time that it came to be when we were kids and teenagers, that was its magical time. And it's now kind of somewhat nostalgic, but also a part of pop culture. There are trends there is just in movies, at least since Star Wars, probably the first one to do it. There's always been some kind of franchise or whatever that just grabs the zeitgeist, and it becomes the thing where it's just, I mean, I, you know, before the most recent one, of course, would be the MCU, you know, and before the MCU, I would say it was probably Harry Potter, you know, and I don't really know what it was between Harry Potter and Star Wars, but I'm sure there was something I'm not thinking of, you know? And I think that was a misjudgment on the decision maker's part. Not that, like I said, not that Star Wars is not still massively popular. It is. It's just not that all-encompassing thing that everybody, hardcores and non-hardcores alike, get into. And I think they overreached a little bit, and they realize that now, and that's part of why we're not getting any more. And some of that falls on them, I think. There's many reasons for this, because of the you know, trying to do this juggling act, so to speak, you know, where, well, let's do something that the hardcores are happy with, but also try to bring in a new audience. You know, trying to recapture lightning in a bottle never happened. You know, as a wrestling guy, a wrestler myself, I preach upon all the time that wrestling has always been about stars, not necessarily a product, and that is probably why you're seeing a bit of a downfall from the numbers we used to see. And to use the wrestling analogy, there's only one Hulk Hogan. There's only one Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know? And Stone Cold's a great example. The Stone Cold Steve Austin character probably would not be popular today in 2019. He's popular with wrestling fans now because he's a nostalgia act, but at the same time, he's a little too politically incorrect for today's taste. Not to say Stone Cold, you know, Steve was a very athletic guy, but he wasn't, he didn't have the same in-ring style that is popular nowadays. And so that's hard to understand, but that's just an example in my world of catching that lightning in a bottle for that moment in time. And I think that time for Star Wars has passed. And I don't think the people that made the decision understood that. So I think that's some of the contributing factor. I did want to make comment on one thing, though. When you talked about the critical response to Rise of Skywalker as opposed to the fan response, outside of Empire Strikes Back, most of the Star Wars movies have never been like huge darlings of the critics, have they?
I think you're right. And I remember there were people who were, negative might not be the word, but there were people who were disappointed by Empire because, of course, the good guys don't win in that one. They escape, but they don't win. And I've heard the stories that there were reporters that were like giving Last Jedi a positive review because they were afraid of like getting out of good graces, you know, with Disney or Lucasfilm. I don't know if that's true or not, but if that was true, then, you know, why are the reviews lower for Rise of Skywalker? Yeah. And I had also seen the complaints from fans that Rose's character was dialed back. And again, I think that just goes back to, if you're closing out the story, then the main characters should be front and center. And sadly, some characters are going to have to go to the back seat.
Right. And do I think this was partly JJ feeling like some people were upset? Yeah. But I also think there's some truth to what you're saying, too. And I also think there's this, what we were talking about earlier, with what if JJ got to direct the middle one, you know, that was maybe just one of those things saying, hey, that was never where I saw the Finn character going, and I don't understand it, so I don't want to step on Ryan's toes, you know? So the best thing I can do, instead of acting like it never happened, is just downplay it, if that makes sense. Trying to essentially be somewhat, you know, it's like, hey, he has to accept the fact that this character's been established and her presence on screen has been, you know, upgraded or, you know, increased or whatever. I can't avoid that. That's history now. I've heard that a lot when you're dealing with things like this, where you have, you know, episodic multi-piece movies, and one creative team will leave and another one will come in, and you'll have fans of certain things that were introduced by the one creative team, and the other one will go, well, I couldn't really go there simply because I didn't know where they were going to go, and I didn't want to step on their toes, you know?
Right.
And I respect that. I respect that. But the other thing I was going to bring up with the critical when I brought that up is I think that's a great example of, and I think it's more prevalent now than it's ever been before, is the disconnect quite often. And we can say this as nerds. And for our younger listeners, they don't know this, but me and Seth do. We remember a time when nerd culture was not accepted by the mainstream. It was absolutely the most popular thing in the world. And so we were very accustomed to, you know, the straights, the normal folks, not being accepting of what we found very entertaining. That included critics. Now we live in a world with social media and a time where geek culture or geek properties are popular with the mainstream. And when you see critics not go gaga over something that you like, it becomes weird. And it's to me, it shows now more than any other time the disconnect, I think, between critics and fan bases. And it also shows the fact that critics, and remember, ladies and gentlemen, there was a time when I was in college, I considered being a critic, a music critic, not a movie critic. They kind of live in an echo chamber almost, critics do. And they sometimes can get disconnected from what sells to the general populace. Think about it. I'm as a horror guy and a guy who loves slasher. Yes, Halloween's my favorite movie, but my favorite franchise of all those slashers is probably Friday the 13th. Can you think of a more crapped on, successful money making franchise that got crapped on by critics than Friday the 13th? I dare you to think you can't, you know?
Right, right. But even goes back to the original, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was a little bit of love for the original, but there were a lot that didn't like it, said it was, you know, derivative, it was too cool, it was too violent, it was just basically, you know, like let's treat women badly. So there were all these critical, and there always have been of them. And yet it didn't stop that franchise from making a boatload of money. Merchandise. Is there anywhere you can go in the world nowadays you don't see Jason Voorhees stuff? It just is what it is. It's become a piece of American pop culture because there was a large, fervent, ardent fan base, but it was never a critical darling. And I think, one of my biggest examples of, well, the critics got this one wrong, you know? And right. So I always say, because of that, I also find it fascinating that a lot of things that are poo-pooed on at a time are often reviewed 20 to 40 years later and looked at through a different eye. Horror movies are definitely one of those, since I'm a horror fan. But I think a lot of the modern critiques of the early Star Wars stuff are much more, I don't want to say forgiving, just pleasant, than what they got back in the early 80s, you know? So,
right.
But I think critics live in an echo chamber sometimes and forget that not everybody goes to a movie to see this, this, and this. Some people just go to a movie because they just want to be entertained, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong in saying that?
No, not at all. So I take it we're in agreement then that this was a suitable ending to all three trilogies? Yeah,
it is. Now, to me, the thing, and you have to correct me here if I'm wrong, because you follow this stuff more closely than I do. the one thing that really stuck out like a sore thumb to me that of JJ going, besides Rose's, you know, like less involvement, like you said, we gave an excuse for that. And some of these other things we've brought up already. The fact that they brought Palpatine back was the first sign. And of course, we knew this several months ago. Mm-hmm. Was my first sign JJ was really sticking that peace pipe out to those that have been offended by Last Jedi. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, that did not seem to be the way. Forget what Rian Johnson did in Last Jedi. This was a surprise to everybody. This was not something that was planned months and years ago that Palpatine was going to be the center of this whole thing and wind up in the third one. This was something JJ added, you know, last minute. Am I wrong there? Or what? You, like I said, you follow that more than I do.
Well, the story that I had heard, and this is probably rumor that may have been embellished. You know, I don't know how accurate it is, but we, as you remember, Colin Trevorrow was going to do episode 9.
Right.
And that is allegedly where the Matt Smith rumors came from, that he was going to be.
I did notice Colin was still credited in the credits as one of the writers. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah. And that could be some sort of contract thing, you know, where he still has to get credited, whether they make
it. Yeah, I don't know all that thing about like Screenwriters Guild, all those different unions they've got with all that stuff. You're probably right there. I didn't think about that.
But Colin was allegedly the one that was going to cast Matt Smith as the villain. But he also wanted to feature Luke heavily. And of course, Luke got killed off in Last Jedi.
So, Luke didn't get killed. He became one with the Force.
Became one with the Force. Yes, thanks. And so then that's why Colin quit, is because he was going to write a very Luke-centric story. And something else that is definitely worth mentioning when talking about this, and this is going back several years now, I believe I don't know if it was Mark Hamill himself or somebody else that was there, but Mark tells the story of when George told him we're making episode 7, and this is before the merger became official. And he met George, had lunch. I think Carrie Fisher was there too, but another man that was also there was Ian McDiarmid, you know, the actor who plays Palpatine.
Right.
And I can't help but think, if the idea was not to bring back Palpatine, why would he? I mean, maybe he just wanted to have lunch with Ian McDiarmid there. I mean, it's possible, but I can't help but think that he was called in when being told that there's going to be an episode 7 because he was going to be a part of it. So you think
there were plans, no matter who was the creative team, for Palpatine to come back, is what you're saying.
Right. Now, George Lucas, of course, changes his mind so often. And as a person who tries to be creative myself, I think I can understand that. You know,
sometimes you do have those creative minds that change that said mind as often as you and I change our pairs of socks. But I digress.
Right. But Return of the Jedi was supposed to be the end. And when George was going to sell Lucasfilm, he put episode 7 into production so he could say, hey, look, we're going to be making a new movie. But I'd also heard the story that George was originally thinking of doing it himself again. But then you're talking 10 years of filmmaking and the guy's already in his 70s. So,
Well, I mean, the reason I just thought, maybe that release of him, you know, them, you know, trying to do something to please the, you know, those who were upset. But if that's the case, then, you know, you might be right. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I said it before that if killing off Snoke so anticlimactically, you know, in only the second movie of this series, if that leads to Palpatine coming back, then I'm okay with that trade.
Right, but if you're not going to bring him back, please, 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 please develop Snoke, which we never got.
So basically what I'm getting at is George made episodes 1 through 6, which became the, you know, rise, fall, and redemption of Anakin Skywalker, you know, the tragedy of Anakin Skywalker, you could call it. So in order to make new movies, I mean, Anakin already fulfilled the prophecy and destroyed the Sith. Even, of course, 30 years later, they show back up. But you know, I can't help but wonder how you would expand on that if 1 through 6 is the story of Anakin Skywalker. Now, there were anywhere between 9 to 12 movies that George Lucas had in his head at some point in the 70s or 80s, because 12 parts, that was the usual length of those Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers specials from the right. 30s.
So you think he had four trilogies in mind originally?
Right, right. And I remember reading a interview with, I think it was Gary Kurtz, and he said when they were making Empire, they had nine movies drawn out. Right, right. And it would have basically been Luke confronts the Emperor in like the final movie or maybe the movie before that, and he just kind of becomes the Jedi stranger everywhere he goes or something to that effect. So,
you know. Which is more of that Western tropes that we talk about.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess the next question that I'll ask here is, could we see an episode 10? I mean, if it's not going to be a Skywalker saga thing, do you think they could get away with calling it episode 10, or do you think they'd have to come up with something else?
I don't know why not. I mean, it, at this point, especially post-MCU, the idea and concept of a shared universe is going to be something audiences are willing to accept. You know, I think you have to be careful on how you market it, because we've already seen what happens when you market a quote unquote Star Wars story. We saw what happened with Solo, and there's a reason why Disney has said, nope, we're not going to do any more standalones. You know, I think that it's possible, but I don't know if they run that risk, if that makes any sense.
Right.
They might not. I don't know. I think that it would be interesting. Where do you go, I guess? I mean, you've already done the Palpatine. I guess you could do the continuing stories of Rey. But, I mean, the way I took the end of this, she's essentially the last Jedi. Mm-hmm. You know, and she is the culmination of you know, everything the Jedi Order had been for thousands of years. Because, I mean, that's kind of the whole point of the finale, wasn't it? You have all the Jedi in you, is essentially what they said, you know?
Right.
And so it's like, where do you go? Does she do what Luke did in the expanded universe stuff and start a new Jedi school and try to bring the order back? And did this, I mean, are the Sith really dead? I mean, seems to me like you've already given a lot of that a pretty good finale. Why would you go back? You know? But then again, we're talking about Hollywood, who will, you know, whatever. I just brought up Friday the 13th. How many times has Jason died and come back? Because, well, we know why Jason's died and come back. Because it makes money.
Right.
It's about making money, you know? So
I couldn't help but notice in the kind of the epilogue or the falling action, so to speak, they opened the door and kind of dropped a few nuggets, I think, for what future movies or TV shows could be. I mean, sure. The one that jumped out at me the most was when Lando was talking to, I forget the gal's name, that was another former stormtrooper.
Right.
And Lando asks, so where are you from? And she can't remember. He's like, well, let's find out. You know, so that right. seems to imply that, I would imagine it would be more on Disney Plus than a theater, but that implies to me that they might do some sort of Lando series. And I have said before that I think something like that, especially Lando, would be perfect for it. Each episode could start with Lando and something triggers a memory and Billy Dee starts telling the story, and then it just kind of fades into Donald Glover where he acts everything out for the next hour or so, and then it comes back, much like the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles.
Right, know? Right, right. Which I do believe at one point in those, and I actually like those shows, I knew at one point, didn't they have Harrison Ford reprise that role at one point?
Yes, yes, and I think it was supposed to be like in the 40s, I think, when it happened.
Right, right. Because for the most of the run of that show, it was an older actor they had portraying a, you know, literally like a 90-something-year-old.
Indiana, yeah.
Indy, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I could see that. I mean, and I think we had talked about this off mic. I felt, personally, they were definitely at least dangling that carrot, so to speak, with the concept of the idea that she might actually be Han's Lando's daughter, you know?
Right.
Or granddaughter. And, once again, he's a character that's beloved, but not that much is known of his backstory. And we didn't even really get that much in the Solo movie. So, but he has always been presented as a bit of a player and a playboy, a ladies man, so to speak. So the idea of Lando having a kid he didn't even know about him having is not that hard to swallow. You know, it's really not.
And I heard a interview with Billy Dee several years back, around the time I think Force Awakens was still being made, hadn't been released yet, and somebody was asking Billy Dee about being in movies, and he said he had submitted the idea. He thinks it would be a good idea of Lando having a daughter that's trying to become a Jedi. Yeah, because, of course, that means you got the womanizing, smiling ladies' man, and now he becomes overprotective of his own daughter. I mean, I think that would be a story that tells itself.
Yeah. There's not that difficult to write that story, is it?
Right.
I think that was one for sure that could be. And we have talked about before here that we feel that the combination of the success of the Disney Channel, or the Disney streaming service, we should say, with the idea of what we were talking about, how maybe Star Wars is not the cash grab they thought it was going to be, and it's times have changed, that maybe this is where they're wanting to head now. I think they realized that with the MCU, which is why they've got so many things that would seem to be a continuation of the MCU as what we would think would be movies. They've already announced, we know Disney has told us they're going to be, that's going to be on Disney, like the Falcon and Winter Soldier, like WandaVision. No, that's Disney Plus stuff. That's where the money's going, I think. Look, movies are never going to go completely away. They're not, there's too much money in them, but things change. Movies, think about what movies used to be back in the, before television. I mean, it was a big deal to go to the movies, and people got dressed up, and you know what I'm saying. I mean, it just, everything changes. Nothing stays the same, and there's nothing wrong with that. Growth is normal, Change is normal. But yes, sometimes it can be a painful for some thing. But I got no issues with that. Was there any other stories besides that one that was glaringly stuck out to you? Hey, there's a story to be told here, and maybe we'll see this on the streaming service.
I would absolutely love, now they didn't overtly tease it, but I don't think they would need to. I would be all for a Zori Bliss TV show.
Sure,
so,
sure.
I don't know why they took a gal that looks like Carrie Russell and put a mask over her, but kind of makes her into the female Mandalorian, so to speak.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're not doing too bad with that. Let's be honest. I mean, that's quite the pop culture phenomenon right now, which once again gives credence to what I'm talking about. Things just change, and a lot of these things we used to think of, well, this would be a movie. And I think that's the other thing too, is Star Wars for people our age was such a big thing. The idea of it being a TV type thing. Let's be honest, what happened the only time in our lifetime where they tried to do TV stuff with it was the holiday special. How'd that work out? I wanted to bring up, it's another, besides the whole Frankenstein reanimator kind of vibe with Palpatine, the fact they brought him back to me once again is a horror trope that I loved. I quote John Carpenter all the time for obvious reasons. I'm a huge John Carpenter fan, and if anybody knows horror, we both have agreed John Carpenter knows that guy, right? One of the things he's talked about before in interviews that they did here is that evil never dies. And the best you can ever do as a good guy is fight evil to a draw. And so the idea of Palpatine not being dead and then bringing him back, that was yet another horror trip that I was fine with. That it's like, can you really, yes, you're going to say the Sith are over, but are they really? Can you ever really conquer true evil? Doesn't it always exist in some form or another?
Right.
I mean, like I said, that is a hardcore horror trope that if you're a horror fan, this is not something that's hard for you to swallow, I guess is the word I'm looking for. I will say this. I think you and me talked about this too. We haven't really brought it up yet, but am I thinking, is this a make or break for me with a movie? No, it's not. But it was something I thought was set up. I think it would have paid a lot of fan service and everybody would like to have seen it. I did feel they missed an opportunity by not having, we got the voices of all the past Jedi, even ones that I know I had to tickle you were from the television shows, from Clone Wars. But I think you had even said yourself, you felt like they missed an opportunity by not having all of them appear as Force ghosts to Rey at the end.
Right.
That's probably the only weakness I found in this movie. Did you agree with me on that? I think you said you did.
Yeah, it's probably the biggest one for me. And maybe there's a reason for it. And if anything changed after Clone Wars, then that's where we might get Qui-Gon. But what they depicted Qui-Gon as, he could only talk to Yoda from, he couldn't actually appear as a Force ghost.
Like we have seen in like the end of Return of the Jedi or Obi-Wan in the middle of Empire. I got you.
Right.
Which I think you and me had discussed after I came out of the theater like yesterday and I called you. All due respect to Ewan McGregor. I love Ewan McGregor. I think he does a great job with Obi-Wan. And I think it's quite plain to see he is attempting to channel, you know, a young Sir Alec Guinness when he does that role. If we're to buy what Obi-Wan tells Luke about Anakin dying and when, you know, he turned to the dark side, and George goes that mindset in the special editions by removing the Sebastian Shaw Force ghost and putting the Hayden Christensen one in there. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't the Force, if we see a Force ghost of Obi-Wan at this point, shouldn't it be Alec Guinness and not Ewan McGregor?
Theoretically, yes, but I also would be cool with it if there was an explanation like, well, they're ghosts. They can look like their younger selves if they want to.
They can manifest how they choose.
Right.
Yeah, that would be a way to write it off. I know it probably would be a little bit more expensive to do an Alec Guinness. But, I mean, if they did it with Carrie and her Force ghosts at the end of this one, they could do it. And I know this makes it sound like I'm just jonesing for more Alec Guinness, and you would be correct. but it's just like, maybe that's why they didn't want to do it. I don't know. I don't think it would be over just one character, but I think you can see where I'm coming from when I say that. You know, if that's
right,
you know, if that's their reasoning for it, was they didn't know. But I also sitting here thinking, well, this was all new dialogue, as you pointed out too. They got Liam Neeson and they got Hayden Christensen and Ewan McGregor all to come in and do these new lines, which was, you know, probably what, a couple hours in a studio to record those lines. How hard would it be for them to get them into, you know, an hour's worth of makeup and costume and then film whatever they needed to do the ghost thing? That was where I was thinking as a fan on that. But, you know, maybe I'm just fanboying too much there. Mm-hmm. I mean, heck, they even got James Earl Jones to come back because we hear Darth Vader talk to her too when all the Sith are talking to him. So,
right.
Which I found fascinating. You know, I, you and me have not discussed this yet. What were your thoughts on the fact that it's the same person, unless once again, you want to buy the Obi-Wan explanation. She hears Darth Vader as a Sith, but then when she hears the voice of the Jedi, she hears the Hayden Christensen Anakin Skywalker voice. What were your thoughts? Is that, are you okay with that?
That smacked me in the face, really. Now, granted, maybe it was something in Kylo's head because of the, he kept the mask all this time.
Right.
So, but you'd think if he's communicating from the afterlife, he wouldn't need to be a more machine than man, a mechanical giant.
Right. It's like, yeah, I get the fact that what Obi-Wan said, he ceased to be Anakin, but it seems that to me kind of just gives a big middle finger to the original trilogy, because that's the whole point, is the redemption of Anakin and Darth Vader's dead, you know? Then right. Again, as I thought about this, maybe it was just a trick, because it's the Sith, and I think deception is a part of any kind of darkness or evil. You know, you follow where I'm going with that?
Right, yeah.
I mean, we know that Palpatine is one who has always worked from the shadows through subterfuge. And I mean, doesn't Leia even explain that to her Rey at some point? This is how it's always been. This is what he does, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that, you know, she thought it was Darth Vader and it sounded like us as the audience of Darth Vader, but it wasn't really Darth Vader, you know?
Right.
Because Darth Vader doesn't exist anymore, because Anakin's reclaimed his humanity, so to speak. I will say this, and I think you and I talked about this too. As a creative person myself, and understanding trying to tell a very simple story of black versus white, whether it was planned or not, we've had that discussion earlier, you know, about Palpatine coming back. It made sense from a storytelling, something that wasn't hard for me to buy or stomach as a fan, that Palpatine always had a backup. That
right.
Yes, his main plan, we see, you know, the beginnings of that in the prequels. we see the culmination of that in the original, which was this whole I'm going to have an apprentice. I want to be Anakin. Anakin's broke down, so I'll get Luke. Doesn't matter. Same bloodline. But this idea that we see now, if this doesn't, this is my contingency plan. You know, I have the back, I'll build this backup fleet. I know I've got a granddaughter, that kind of stuff, all that, that being in place. I have no problems buying or believing that actually was going on with us not knowing all during the original and even the prequels for that matter, because that's kind of what a person like Palpatine do, you know? So,
right.
I guess you felt the same way that, I mean, the idea you had a backup plan was not hard to swallow.
No, not at all. I mentioned before at the top of the show here about things going full circle in the sequel trilogy. I think it did a good job of kind of going full circle, not only to the classic trilogy, but to the prequels as well, because, one of Sidious's first lines, or one of Palpatine's first lines, is the same thing he told Anakin about, you know, the dark side's a path to, powers some might find, I forget the exact word, but...
Unnatural, I think was the word.
I think it was, you know, when they were in that, you know, jellyfish opera or whatever it was on Coruscant.
And it's like, if you go back and watch that and repeat viewings, the facial expressions on Ian McDiarmid's face, if you didn't know he was the bad guy, you were an idiot.
Right.
I mean, every time he says that line, he gives that, like, you know, I've watched a lot of horror movies. I've seen that face on, like, Vincent Price, Peter Lorre, a gazillion times. You know, that's just an evil look. I digress. I'm sorry, Seth. Go ahead.
And I had put it out there that, you know, when Anakin became Darth Vader, Palpatine told him, oh, well, only one's figured out how to cheat death. We can work together and figure it out. Like you were talking about with the backup plan, would it be surprising at all if in storyline Palpatine did learn how to cheat death and just didn't tell Anakin because, you know...
That's a Sith thing to do, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, we've taught that ever since Darth Bane created the rule of two for the Sith. That's the way it goes. When you become a Sith master, you realize... This all ends when my apprentice kills me.
Right.
Because you're essentially training your apprentice to be that kind of backstabber.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. And Palpatine, you remember, when after the fight between Luke and Vader on the second Death Star, Palpatine says, you know, take your father's place at my side. So he's like, he's killing Vader before Vader has the opportunity to kill him.
Right. It's like, and so you've got to think, Luke's not a dummy. This is going through his mind while he's going, oh... So when you get tired of me, you get rid of me too, huh? You know,
right.
Not a great offer, dude. Not a great offer. To go back to how they tied everything in, just little things. Kind of it's off topic. We're talking the heavy stuff. This is much more lighter. But I don't know if all our fans caught this. You said you did. Much like there were the complaints or whatever. I don't know if they're complaints, just comments that JJ essentially remade New Hope with. Force Awakens. There were elements in this that were essentially JJ remaking Return of the Jedi. You agree with me on that, right?
Yeah. It wasn't quite as overt and ongoing, but
right.
I mean, it was there.
Right. But one of those things would be, of course, you know, one of the worst things that they did in the special editions was remove the Chub Chub song that everybody loved. The original fun little, you know, Ewok song during the celebration.
Took out Lopty Neck too, yeah.
Yeah, they changed it to that. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's John Williams, so this beautiful, sweeping score, but they redid that scene again at the end of Rise of Skywalker, where you see the other systems in the galaxy reacting to the fall of the First Order. And one of those is, of course, on the planet moon Endor. And we see Wicket, who's even was played once again by Warwick Davis in the credits. But for those that need to pay more attention when they go see it again, he's wearing the same headdress that Chief Chirpa was wearing in Return of the Jedi. So that means essentially Wicket is now the chief of the tribe, which totally makes sense. This is what, 30 years later?
Yeah, give or take, yeah.
And so, you know, the way I look at it, I'm like, well, that's a nice little nod, because, and he looked older, his fur looked a little grayer, because we're never given an age of the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi, but I always felt like Wicket was a young, like, you know, maybe 20s in human terms.
Yeah, he's still and up so, and coming, yeah.
Right, and then we both had agreed when we talked off mic, Wicket was one of the heroes of the Battle of Endor, not just for the Rebel Alliance, but for his tribe. of Ewoks. So the fact, you know, Chief Chirpa probably has died and he is, you know, moving up in the ranks of the tribe to that position, it's not a shocker. And it's little things like that that I think us hardcore fans like. You said you did catch the fact he was wearing the chieftain headgear, didn't you?
I saw it. I didn't make the connection that it was Chief Chirpa's, though.
Oh, I did right away. Mm-hmm. But I, unlike a lot of people our age, I don't hate the Ewoks that much. You know, a lot of people our age hate it because, you have to realize, ladies and gentlemen, when these movies came out, when New Hope came out, Seth and I were anywhere like 4 to 8 years old, most people around our age. So by the time we got around to Return of the Jedi, we were at that age in our life where kid things weren't cool anymore. You know, we were all like, 13 to 16 at that point, 17?
Yeah.
So seeing something like the Ewoks, oh, it's stupid, it's just for kids. You know, as a almost 50-year-old man now, I can be much easier. And I was never one that hated the Ewoks. I thought they were cool, you know?
Right.
And I don't care what anybody says. The first time that baby Ewok popped out of the basket when 3PO was explaining the history of the movies at that point, if everybody in the audience, including yourself, didn't go, oh, you're lying. You're lying. That was the cutest damn thing I had ever seen on screen at that point in my life. You know, but anyways, I digress. Go ahead.
Right. But it's definitely something to add as far as going full circle. And one of the things that they showed in this movie, I don't think it was shown, at least not explicitly in previous movies, but the whole force healing thing.
Right. I was going to ask you about that. Once again, you're deeper in this than I am. I don't ever remember there being, you know, that being explicitly shown as a force power, you know. Not that I think it's wrong, you know.
Right.
When we've talked about Iron Fist and, you know, here on the podcast, when we reviewed the Netflix series, you had deferred to me because I'm an Iron Fist fan. I knew more about the character than you did. And I brought up that he uses chi, which chi is essentially one of those things George based the Force on, you know.
Right, right.
That Danny can use his chi to heal himself and others, but it, at great cost to himself. Not that it doesn't do him any damage, just it exhausts him, you know, to channel that much positive energy through himself. I will have to say I was a little upset that Rey did it and didn't seem to affect her at all. I get the fact she's supposed to be this most badass force sensitive ever because she's essentially got the epitome of the dark side being a Palpatine with all the other light side forces backing her too. But I would not have that problem if we hadn't seen, was that episode 2 or 3 of The Mandalorian, where Baby Yoda used his force to protect the Mandalorian, and then he was out cold for what, 3 days?
Something like, yeah, and he did the healing as well.
Right, right, exactly. So it was like, once again, and not to sound like an old fart, you really made Rey a Mary Sue when you didn't have to. Please give her some weaknesses.
Right.
I mean, at least make the first time she did it, like, pass out for a few minutes. Especially when she essentially resurrected Ben, you know? I'm like, you had time to kill there in the runtime. Could you had her not just faint for a minute or so? I won't get off that. I like the character of Rey. I think Daisy Ridley is a charming young lady, an actress. I think she's got a great, bright future in front of her in Hollywood. It's not her fault. There are so many glaring issues with how the character of Rey was written, in my opinion, you know? I mean, I'm just a person who thinks I want my good guys to have some flaws. That's what even Superman has his kryptonite.
And magic.
Yeah, and magic. Imagine. Yeah. But, you know, I digress. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'll get off my soapbox on that one.
Now, the cheat death thing, that's what I was getting to with this heal or force drain or whatever they want to call it, that you notice when Palpatine did it, he regrew into a full body again.
Right.
And that is something that Darth Plagueis does in his book. Now, granted, that's Legends now. I don't think it's official canon now, but
it's not canon anymore, yeah, unfortunately.
Right. That was how he was able to do the cheating of death, is he was able to drain life force from other people and heal himself and, you know, make himself younger.
Right.
And it just goes back to the thing like we were saying about he probably knew how to do this all along and just didn't tell anybody.
Right. Now, once again, to get back to the coming full, you know, the whole idea of coming full circle. I did think it was cool that once Rey took her force powers and combined them with all the force powers of all the other Jedi, she was able to finish off what Mace Windu started with Palpatine.
Right.
Because, you know, when she sends out the Force, which, of course, Mace Windu wasn't sending out Force Lightning. He was deflecting back Palpatine, but it caused the deformation of his face. We see that at the end of Revenge of the Sith, but it didn't kill him off. And we saw what that full-on power was in his death scene now, you know, so.
Right.
And that's not a knock on Mace Windu. I'm not going to argue with Nick Fury and Samuel L. because, you know, he does have a purple lightsaber for a reason. But my point is the idea of what could have happened if Mace had been able to stay more focused, maybe. You know, I guess right. I'm going with that.
Yeah. Now, as far as going full circle in the sequel trilogy, I couldn't help but notice this. Obviously, when we first see Luke, he tosses the lightsaber over his shoulder in Last Jedi. And then Rey did something similar. She went back to Ahch-To, and Force Ghost Luke catches the saber. So it's like the exact opposite or the exact inverse of something like that.
And he even goes as far as to say, like, that's not how a Jedi treats their lightsaber, which, you know, come on. Once again, that is one of those glaring examples of JJ going, okay, this made some people mad. Let's fix this, you know?
And the last thing I wanted to bring up as far as full circle, a lot of people know by now that obviously they brought back Harrison Ford to do a cameo as Han Solo to Ben. And now not only did they do that, I think, to give kind of a happier send-off, you know, that it means that the last time we see Han Solo, he isn't gutted like a fish. We actually see something positive afterwards. And another thing that we Star Wars geeks notice when Kylo apologizes or Ben apologizes for killing him, you know, he says, "I'm sorry." And what does Han say? "I know."
So I know, I caught that one too. I'm going, "Oh, okay, nice little wink, wink to Empire right there." I think another thing too I liked about that. You make a good point that it was a way for the fans to be able to say goodbye to a beloved character without seeing him good like a fish. It's also, I think, it was, I liked that the fact that he wasn't that he legitimately looked like he was, you know, he wasn't ethereal. He wasn't non-corporeal. He was corporeal. And he even says, "No, I'm your memory, you know, I'm your memory." So he wasn't a Force ghost. And we even had the whole episode where we debated on the idea that Han is a Force sensitive, which I still stand by the fact I think he is. He's just untrained on how to channel it, you know? And so, yeah, I think that's a little thing that probably doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people unless they're hardcores, but you're a hardcore, so you probably appreciate that too, that they're delineating that this wasn't like Luke and Leia showing up as Force ghosts like they do at the end. This was different.
Yeah.
Similar, but different.
And it's also a follow-up to The Last Jedi. What did Luke tell Kylo when he was disappearing? You know, "If you strike me down, I'll always be with you, like your father."
Right. I've always said I think the two main themes of the Star Wars franchise overall are hope and redemption. Mm-hmm. And I think a third one, and it's to a lesser, but I think it probably is number three, is you can't run from your past. Your past is part of what makes who you are. And that's just a way of them manifesting it. That concept, that trope of strike me down, I'll come back 1,000 times stronger, I'll always be with you. You see what I'm saying? That's just a concept that exists in Star Wars, and you have to accept it. You know that, and I think that's very true to life, which is probably why it's been such a popular franchise, is you are who you are because your past made you who you are, and you can never run from it, and you probably shouldn't, you know? And sadly, unfortunately, there are people who are going to be butts and are going to judge you only on your past instead of just accepting the fact that that's part of what, you know, but I digress.
Well, the last thing I wanted to talk about here were the predictions that we made a couple of weeks back, because we always seem try to put ourselves over as saying, you know, we got a pretty good batting average with this stuff. So
we do. not trying to toot my own horn, but toot.
Now, I'll start with my predictions. Some of them I got half right, and some of them, you know, I was wrong on. Now, the first one that I had predicted, I was saying this pretty much as soon as that initial trailer came out. And it is kind of funny when you see or hear the reaction. You know, I in Star Wars Celebration 2015, when they debuted that first trailer, I guess it was the second trailer, and it ended with the tease of Han saying, "Chewie, we're home," and you get the Road Warrior pop.
Oh, yeah.
This one, when that first trailer was over and you heard the laughing, there were people like, "Guh?" You know?
Right, right.
But bottom line, I was thinking he was going to be a Force ghost. That, of course, is not the case. So my prediction for that.
Yeah.
So now, the next one, Palpatine had been manipulating Kylo the whole time. And I think a lot of people probably figured that one out beforehand. So that's but I had those in one prediction. So that's what I was meaning by like only being half right. I had said that Luke would return to flesh and blood, and nope, wrong on that one too. And Anakin would be involved. Technically true, but it was just his voice. You know, I would love to have seen a Force Ghost Anakin or whatever. So I think you actually got more right than I did, because I'm looking at these and some of them are only half right. But I the ones you had, you were of the mindset that Palpatine was actually alive and didn't die.
Now that we're keeping score.
You know, right.
Not the super competitive person that I am. Not at all.
And you had that several Jedi will appear in ghost form, including Leia. Well, you're half right, because we did get Force Ghosts. But here's the big one. This is the one that I'm most happiest that you were right on. You said that both Lando and Chewie would survive.
Yes, I did. I just felt like the way they handled us going in knowing they were going to have to kill off Leia simply because Carrie had passed away. You know,
right.
I thought they handled as best they could with what they had, with the cards they've been dealt. Right. Just having her become one with the Force, you know, and doing it simultaneously with her son, I thought was kind of a nice touch. You know, what did you think of the, we haven't mentioned that. What did you think of the scene that was obviously CGI of Luke training Leia to be a Jedi, the flashback scene?
I thought it was fine. I mean, I don't think it's the type of shot George would have made, but it's a pretty common thing now to de-age some of the actors.
Right.
So,
right.
But just to finish up the prediction thing here, you were dead on correct about Lando and Chewie. So,
all right. So I'm like what, 2.5 out of 3 some of that.
Yeah, it's something
and
like so.
We both have said that one of our biggest disappointments, if we had to like pick out one major flaw, is that we didn't get the big group Force Ghost shot, and
right.
We both had kind of predicted that, and we were half right. So I don't know. You want to call that a draw, a time limit draw? I guess you can. But
so that's gonna. We'll start to wrap things up here. Is there anything else about Rise of Skywalker that you wanted to talk about?
No, I stand by what I said at the beginning of this. I felt for the first time in a while, this felt like a movie that George actually had some involvement in, which as a diehard Star Wars fan was kind of nice.
Yeah, agreed. All right, well, we're going to wrap things up here in the Geekly Radio studios. If you liked what you heard and you're hearing us for the first time, go to geekvilleradio.com. That's where you can subscribe to all the shows. And we're all over the feeds of wherever you get great podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and you name it, we're pretty much there. So drop us a line, let us know what we're doing. If there's anything you want us to talk about, I'm certainly open to anything. And now, it's kind of going in a little different direction here, Train. I know how you actually have those Spotify playlists. Well, mm-hmm. I have my own here, since it is Christmas time, this time of year, and I call it Christmas Tomfoolery. So that'll be linked in the show notes at Geekville Radio.
Oh, okie dokie.
And if anybody wants to talk to you about Star Wars or whatever else.
Yeah, I'm always available on Twitter at crazytrain_JB. I am also available on Spotify, same handle. I'll get Seth to link my Christmas playlist on there, which I think he linked the last episode as well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we're recording this right before Christmas, so you probably will listen to this either right around Christmas Day or right after. So to all our listeners, thank you very much. It's been a crazy but fun year. We appreciate y'all tuning in. We always say it, give us a like, give us a follow, let other people know that we're out there. That's the only way we grow as a channel. Whatever your beliefs are, or whatever you adhere to, have a happy holiday. Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah,
Festivus,
winter solstice. Yeah. I don't care. Have a good one and have it safe. And we look very forward to y'all joining us in 2020. It'll be a fun year.
All right. We will wrap it up here. Thanks, folks, for listening. And we'll be back next time.
Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any product or company unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the hosts and or guests are purely their own and do not represent the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, A1-Wrestling.com, or any affiliates. Some media used on Geekville Radio is the respective copyright of its publishers, all rights reserved.
I don't think anybody who knows me would be surprised at this, but the first two songs I put on that Christmas playlist was Rob Halford and Hank Snow. So